Selection Committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And it's so fun.
It's so f***ing great to be back, guys.
In case you missed the explicit tag on iTunes.
Yeah.
We're going to say some
words.
Which
has been
here
there for like 20 episodes now.
Yeah, yeah. We'll say things like damn. We'll say hell.
Shoot.
Shoot.
Codswallop.
Mm-hmm.
And Benjamin.
Ooh. That's a little risque, don't you think?
I know. I'm sorry, but you gotta say these things.
But mostly we're gonna say things about film, because we are Chicago's guide to film and cinema and all the things that are happening here. One of the big things I'm excited about, and I think you're probably excited about as well, is the Chicago Critics Film Festival is coming up.
Yes. I am excited about that.
You all remember when we previously had Eric Childress on the show. A fantastic critic. I get to work with him every week on the Nick DiGilio show, and he's still one of my favorite people to listen talk about movies. And him and the rest of the Chicago Critics Film Association are putting on a great festival, as they have done for the last, I want to say this is year six,
and it's at the Music Box every year.
Yep. And they're really great. Last year I saw a ton of amazing films, including the Chicago premiere of Eighth Grade, which had the writer director Bo Burnham was there. They had a 35 millimeter screening of Jurassic Park, which was it brought me to tears.
Yeah.
It really did, because I was so excited. I've loved that movie since I was a child. And obviously it came out the year I was born, so I didn't get to see it on the big screen. So it was a really spectacular chance for that. And this year, what I'm really excited for is they're going to be having a 35 millimeter screening, anniversary screening, I believe to the day it was released, 40 years, of Alien. One of the greatest films of the 20th century. That's just a fact.
In space, nobody can hear you screen it in 35 millimeter.
God damn it. And believe it or not, Tom Skerritt is going to be there.
Really?
Dallas.
He's
Dallas in the film.
Okay, so I saw something recently that he actually got to do like a radio thing in, what's the word? In support of this.
Because
they're taking it around, right? They're taking the 35 millimeter print around.
Probably, yeah. If they're showing it here in Chicago, they're probably going to be trying to show it everywhere else, especially for the 40th anniversary.
Right.
I think that makes sense. So he got to do like a radio program character.
And they kind of changed the plot a little bit, where he becomes the hero at the end. He like becomes Ridley, kind of.
He survives instead of getting absolutely punked in the events.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of, and he was just like, he did some cool interviews talking about how it was nice to kind of do a revision of it, you know, looking back on it.
So if you're a film fan here in Chicago, you need to go to the Chicago Critics Film Festival. There's going to be a lot of great films showing, and it goes on for quite a while, so you got a million chances to see some really great films over at the Music Box. But for right now, we are so lucky to be introducing our guest of the week. Connor, would you like to do the honors?
So do we have director and writer Zach Lona and Anthony Gibson, producer of the film. Tom, drum roll please.
He Who Lives in Hidden Lakes. A mockumentary. I'm not sure if you got the drum beats on there on the mic, but
we'll add it in.
We'll do a little post-production. Thank you so much for joining us, Zach and Anthony. Say hello.
Thank you guys for having us.
Seriously, thank you.
This All is right. Awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourselves. Zach, why don't you start us off?
Sure. Well, first, let me say that I'm really glad we came out of the gate with, like, the fucking.
Yeah.
Because, like, 50% of our conversation downstairs was like, can we swear?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it going to be okay to be ourselves?
No, it is.
Well, that's the beauty of the internet. The FCC can't find you here.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Well, I'm here to swear. My name is Zach Lona. I'm from the Southwest suburbs, and I am currently imbued in the production of this film, and Yeah, it's been a long process. Probably about like the past 3 years, I've been some form of conceptualizing it, and then we've been in various forms of production and pre-production for like probably since the beginning of last year.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that comes up a lot when we're talking to folks, whether they're in production or they've just wrapped production and they're in release mode. I think people don't really get how long an independent picture can take to actually make. You know, this isn't Hollywood. They don't have like a schedule where like, yeah, we can be in like pre-production for like, oh no, 6 months to a year, and then we shoot in 3 months, like 2-3 months, maybe even less, depending on what kind of picture they're making, and then it's ready to go.
Yeah.
Anthony,
what's up? My name is Anthony. I'm originally from California, kind of moved up and down north, south, mm-hmm. throughout my life, and then just about 2 years ago now, my now fiance and I decided to just come to Chicago after school and just try our hand at the scene over here. We heard there was cool community, so we wanted to come see what that meant.
So you grew up in California.
I did.
And you came to Chicago to make movies.
I did, yeah.
What now, are you thinking?
It's turning out great, by the way.
Yeah.
Apparently.
I think that's really, really cool because it is a difficult market out there in California. Everybody's got a script to sell, everybody's got an idea.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it was interesting. I guess I never really spent the time trying to integrate myself in the community over there. I went to UC Irvine, which is like in Orange County, just below LA, about 45 minutes on a good day traffic wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I essentially came here maybe a year after that, so I didn't have a lot of time to spend to see what it would really be about. I was aware that the narrative was very much, oh, what are you going to do? You're going to LA after this? And right. I was like, I don't know. When I'm in LA, I don't feel at home. So I don't think so. But I felt weird doing that. I felt weird saying that. It felt like I was doing something wrong.
Very interesting. So you eschewed the typical narrative of going to UC or going to school and then moving out to LA, even though, I mean, you weren't far. You weren't far at all.
Yeah.
What did you study at UC Irvine?
Yeah, I did journalism and film.
Journalism and film.
Mm-hmm.
Was it two different majors or was it the same thing?
They were two different majors.
Okay. Yeah. See, I as you could probably tell by the fact that I work at WGN, I did broadcast.
Yeah.
I always thought about doing some film stuff on the side, film studies. I never really had any pretensions of being a filmmaker, but like someone who maybe film history or film, you know, criticism, that sort of thing. What was the program like at UC?
It was a theoretical program in film, at mm-hmm. least. The journalism was cool because it was a bunch of like superstar journalists from the 90s that just kept apologizing just the whole time because they had expense accounts and they knew that we weren't going to.
that's real though.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, a no unique shit. Experience for sure. And then the filmmaking program was really cool because they challenged us to think about things in like a theoretical way, but there wasn't a ton of the production offered.
Okay.
But they still had some great classes, and I think the community there really allowed us to kind of do things after hours and make our own projects. There was a film festival there on campus, and mm-hmm. so everything always sort of led up to that every year, and everyone was like scrapping to make their projects.
So you were learning from a theoretical perspective how film works,
yeah,
you know, like the quote-unquote rules of film and how, you know, the sausage, not like the hands-on how the sausage gets made, but like, hey, this is how shots should be framed, and this is like, you know, what a good film does narratively. Is that more what we're talking about?
Yeah, and also I think the best way I can describe the program is like, imagine an anthropology course, but through the lens of like for the past 100 years through film and media. So it's a way of getting to like understand, I guess, the culture through film.
So you weren't just watching like new Hollywood stuff, you were watching like everything.
Yeah,
you're going back to history. The earliest days.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, once you finished that, I mean, it sounds like a pretty comprehensive education. What was it like? What was the culture like once you had graduated? I'm just curious because it's interesting to hear that you grew up like around, not Huntington Beach, I guess, right? But it's
not too far.
Not too far from there, right?
Yeah.
We got buddies that live there. Anyway.
Oh, right.
Because it does definitely seem like even a lot of the people that we meet here, like some people have moved out to LA, you know, and it does seem like that is that's sort of the step that you are supposed to make. So I'm curious, like, just what was the culture like when you graduated and you were just like, okay, now I do this?
Yeah, I internally, the culture inside of my body, which was just me dealing with my own like self after graduating and just trying to establish that like the things that I cared about and had the freedom to care about when I was in college, coming out of, I could still care about and had the freedom to care about when no one was interested in educating me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of spent the first year really honestly just raising money and just trying to get a little nest egg to come out here. It wasn't really until the February after I graduated that, like, we both knew that we wanted, my fiance and I, that we wanted to come out here. And so I kind of just spent time writing and, like, working at a restaurant and focusing on that aspect and what I had control over. And I lived far enough away from LA that I wasn't going to be commuting all the time to and from. I mean, there are some people that do that, and I did a little bit of that during college, but when I was doing that, I also ended up getting mono for some reason.
Oh no.
And I don't know if that was from a lack of sleep or just like LA drank the wrong Kool-Aid at the wrong time.
So. That was the sign. Well, now you're here in Chicago making films. So, Zach, I mean, really quickly, just Zach, did you go to film school or?
No, I went my first 2 years to Columbia over here, and then I studied graphic design there, and then I transferred to SAIC because I wanted more freedom in the curriculum. I didn't really at any point study filmmaking. My trajectory was sort of graphic design to like fine art painting to writing like prose and poetry and stuff, and then from there I got into screenwriting with John Petrakis at SAIC, and I wrote a couple feature scripts. And then my younger brother Lucas, who's starring in the film, he's graduating from Columbia on tomorrow. He's in the film program, so it just felt like kind of a natural extension. But I never actually got to study the formalities of film, because like by the time I was ready to do that, I was graduating.
Time was up, in a sense.
It's a really interesting background, honestly, because I do feel like there are definitely, in constructing a piece of graphic like art, you know, there is probably a decent amount of similarities between doing something like that and then translating it into film.
Yeah, honestly, for me, it's not about really the medium at all. Like, I get like ideas, and that's like my North Star. You know, sometimes it'll be an idea for a painting or like a poem, and it just so happens that a lot of my ideas are like films. So
that's very cool. Well, and film is such a multidisciplinary sort of thing. I mean, you hear of directors who are very visually focused, and you know, we're talking about people like, I'm pretty sure Steven Spielberg literally he storyboards everything and he draws it himself. Yeah. And they're pretty good drawings. Like, you know, it's you hear of some directors who just think in those terms, and then you have other directors or you know, people that think in terms more of just broad story, and they have other people who help with the visualization. Like, they see something in their head, they want to tell the story, they just don't know, like, picture wise what they want it to look like until they're behind a camera and they can just be like, all right, this is probably what I want it to be. Meanwhile, they have a great cinematographer that's just like, all right, this is how we're going to do the lighting, this is how we're going to do this. So I like that you have this wide berth of artistic skills. You bring in a little graphic design, that's your visual component, and you've also done some prose, so you understand, like, you know, the structure of story and everything like that. So I guess that brings us all together to this new film, He Who Lives in Hidden Lakes. Tell us about the concept and how you came up with it.
Sure. It's a mockumentary about people who are obsessed with this cryptid type creature, and I've found that a lot of people don't know what that actually means.
Yeah, like
cryptocurrency.
Yeah,
it's basically like
a cryptocurrency creature.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in Illinois.
No, that's the
that
sequel.
That would be terrifying.
But no, but a cryptid is like, you know, like a Bigfoot or like your Mothman or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's about this cryptid called the Hidden Man, and it's basically just exploring people who are really obsessed with the Hidden Man.
That's amazing.
And I love the cryptid stories. I love a good monster story.
Yeah.
As we experienced last night watching The Thing.
Yeah.
I love a good monster story. There's something really great about it. Speaking of Mothman, maybe this is an aside, but were you guys aware of the Mothman craze that happened, I want to say, last summer?
No.
No. There were Mothmen everywhere.
I wasn't there for it, but I have researched it because I'm like, I was trying to find like stuff we could put on the Facebook page. And there was actually a Mothman sighting in basically like my parents' house, like next door to my parents' house.
What?
But they didn't see it.
They did not see the Mothman.
Oh, they did not see the Mothman.
I love the Mothman.
They've heard you were making the movie.
And yeah,
they,
I guess
the Mothman
so.
Came to check like, it out. Check out the monitors.
Came to audition, actually.
Yeah. It does seem like my agent's number.
It does seem like there would be a lot of fertile ground with a movie like that, obviously for comedy and for like horror, but in my opinion, I don't know, it just seems like the coolest part about the cryptids are like the scares were the crazy people that got paranoid along the way, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like you probably had a decent amount of space to be able to make a multifaceted film.
Yeah, I think it is. It's going to be my goal is to make something that feels really unique. Because I'm kind of like moving away from selling it as a comedy, because I've always said that I want half the people in the audience to be laughing and half the people in the audience to just not know what the hell is going on. Yeah, at all. So it's, in my mind, it's like a surrealist piece. Like that's okay. What it is, mm-hmm. for me, but there's all sorts of elements that are going into it.
Yeah. Something that really attracted me to the project is the idea of like myth making. And there's something about the Mothman, like all of us got super excited talking about it. And it's like something about the fact that that's like integrated into our reality feels like extremely gripping. And I think this film is an attempt to explore the process of what it looks like when a community sort of gathers around something that's kind of weird like that. Like the people who are like die hard Mothman people,
right?
Like those are super cool, interesting people, and this film is sort of about those people.
At a certain point, a myth becomes less about what the myth is actually centered around and more about the people who are actually carrying it on, right?
100%. Yeah.
And that's what this is.
Yeah. And that's exciting. I love mockumentaries. I think mockumentaries are a great place to do satire, a great place to just and also just do straight up comedy, some very weird stuff. I'm a big fan of Christopher Guest. I love all his Best in Show. Of course, this is Spinal Tap, which
the quintessential mockumentary. Probably.
It really is, because you have all these musicians who said when they saw Spinal Tap, they didn't laugh, they cried, because they were just like,
it was too real.
No, this is exactly it. Christopher Guest just hit the nail on the head. So in terms of inspiration, were there any films or directors or things that you saw that you're like, this is what I would kind of want to shoot for and give your own twist on?
Yeah, I don't think there are any specific films that really there are of course like filmmakers I admire and films that like really come into my work, but when I think about this idea, there's not really anything that I'm referencing consciously, I guess. But you know, I love like Lynch, like Herzog, Yodorovsky is actually like a huge influence on this. I love The Holy Mountain.
Yeah.
It's just such a crazy movie.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like a perfect movie, but it is.
Hey, Tom doesn't give a shit.
We'll leave it at that, I guess.
But it is. It's daring.
Yeah, it's daring.
If nothing else, it is daring. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned Herzog. He's coming to town. Was he yesterday?
Yesterday he was at the Music Box, and today he's also at Facets, and I am going to see him.
Oh, oh yes. Nice.
After this.
Cool.
Yeah. Zach, I'm a huge fan of your work.
Yeah, ideally I show him the trailer and then
he invests
in it.
So
Herzog, runner, please hear me.
I do want to ask just a little bit about we talked already a little bit about the origin of the story, but I think that when I heard that it was about a cryptid and that it's a mockumentary that's, you know, equal parts surreal and comedy, the concept of a cryptid is immediately kind of funny to me, because I just don't know if I believe in those things, you know, but I am curious, like, do you guys believe in Bigfoots or anything, or...
I believe that there's like a metaphysical layer to reality that influences everything we do, but I don't think that there's like a Bigfoot in the woods.
Fair enough.
I kind of want that first part on like on a t-shirt.
Yeah. There's a metaphysical layer to this reality.
I love that. Speaking of the film, you mentioned that it has a lot to do with not the cryptid itself, but the people searching and the people around it. You wrote this feature, yes?
Yeah.
Tell me about how you handled these characters, because I feel like there's a fine line you can walk between, doing comedy with characters and somewhat making fun of them. You have a trailer on your Indiegogo site, which everybody should visit. It's over on Indiegoggles. Indiegoggles.
Put on your Indiegoggles and go to Indiegogo.
Yeah, you can go to Indiegogo right now and help crowdfund this fantastic project, He Who Lives in Hidden Lakes. But it seems like the characters you have here, you're not... mean to them. You're really just finding the idiosyncrasies in people who search for these types of characters.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And the term writing I use loosely because it's all improvised. There's really not any dialogue that in the entire film. Like, all the stuff you see in the trailer was all improvised. I have very detailed outlines of, like, the beats that I want to hit on.
It's sort of astonishing to see the level of detail that has been integrated into these scenes.
to an improvised thing.
I want to, because there are very specific things that I want to get out of these performances. But I hope when you watch the trailer that the performances, and they're all great, enhance the feeling that this is like a documentary. Mm-hmm. You know, people speak very naturally. I found when I throw them into these situations, and that's a big part of it. What remains to be seen is when we're shooting next month. How does that translate to like these bigger main characters, right? Because they too are very fleshed out on paper, but like with any role, you know, it's going to really take on a new element once we're all on set.
Mm-hmm. You're going to try to discover it on screen, as it were.
Yeah.
Where did you collect some of these actors? Because the ability to improvise is very difficult, especially when you know you have to hit marks. You know, we go to see improv. I mean, this is the greatest improv city in the world. Yeah. You go to I.O., you go to Second City, and you're seeing people, you know, creating their characters on stage, going through plot beats. But to do that on film and with multiple takes and kind of remember things about yourself while also keeping in mind this very detailed outline of where you want this film to go, what was it like finding people who could fit that sort of mold?
Honestly, it's anyone. Basically, how I cast is like, do you look like I envision this character to look like? And then I feel like it's really interesting when you have a range of people with different improv skills, because to me, improv is just like talking.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a whole lot of acting experiences. I've acted in like a couple of short student films, but nothing improvised. But when I work with, you know, the actors that I've worked with, it's been really interesting to see their takes on, you know, how they handle what I've given them. Because honestly, there's not really been any, I haven't had to do a lot of work with the performances.
Really?
That's nice, yeah. Right? As a director, you just kind of have people going and making it up.
Yeah, honestly, like a lot of, I'm casting on intuition, I feel like, a lot. And I think it's working. Mm-hmm. We have Kevin K. Gomez, who is one of the leads, and he plays sort of the premier authority on The Hidden Man. Mm-hmm. He runs the website whoisthehiddenman.com, which is live right now. You can go on whoisthehiddenman.com.
Now, Anthony is laughing.
It gets me. I can't. Yeah, I die every time I see this guy in action. Actually, just the whole concept behind, I think, the world building that sort of we've put our heads together for here. And when I came to the project, Zach was like, I want people to really wonder about the Hidden Man. Like, yeah, if we can get people to really start asking some important questions about who the Hidden Man is, then we've done something mm-hmm. successful.
Now, Anthony, I wanted to ask you about when you came onto the project as producer. Tell us a little bit about what are some of the things you were helping take care of with this, because as Connor and I have talked about in the past, the title of producer is very big.
Oh yeah.
And a lot of people don't really know what that means, because he gets stuff like, oh, from executive producer J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
And then you kind of wonder, like, what exactly did he do? Did he
showed up one day and said, I don't like that. And then,
he threw a mystery box at them. Yeah. Like, what's in it? And he's like, no plot development whatsoever. That's what's in it.
It's another Cloverfield movie.
So what was your role as producer?
To be honest, it really just feels like this hype man.
Hype man.
Like, literally
he walks around with a giant clock.
Dude, and yeah. that's it. It's like, you know, I think working with Zach is, it's been so easy because of the level of detail that he brings to just, and I also just how well thought out this whole thing has been. I mm-hmm. think maybe for me coming in, because at the time, like 2.5 years of it living inside of him, meant that he had a lot of material already sort of established. He had like a full trailer, and it just was me. I'm like, this would be dumb to not get involved in, you know? I mean, yeah. So we just kept meeting consistently, and it was very much just, what do you need? And I'm fortunate. I'm a part of a filmmaking collective here in Chicago called Familiar, and and we have some cool resources and stuff. So I've been able to kind of help provide that end of things for production and sorts of things.
In a sense, you were a little bit of a fixer, and in a sense, you were the Winston Wolfe. Like, you, problems come up, and you're like, all right, I can get this for you.
Yeah.
Whatever resource you need. Like, did you help with locations? Did you help with, securing equipment?
When it comes to the equipment, we've actually been super blessed. 1104 sponsored our project and has given us a healthy stipend to help sort of fund that sort of stuff. So that's incredible. And when it comes to locations, I think because the project is so close to Zach and his home, you know, we're fortunate to have some potential to be filming close to his
home. Yeah, a lot of the stuff that's like that we are like hitting the ground running on are happening like as we're speaking right now.
Yeah,
really?
Like right now we're talking, like we're like, after this, you want to like look through like the insurance paperwork and stuff. Like it's that stuff. But really, Anthony has been like my like film dad.
Like, now there's a lot of ways that people could take that. So yeah. let's unpack that a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like I feel like it's a lot to handle, and I feel like you're the guy where I could be like, hey, this is happening, let me talk at you about this and let's figure out how we could do this. And like all the like, yeah, like with Familiar and stuff like that, it's just like anything I need, like he's the guy, you mm-hmm. know. And it's been such a huge help. Could not have gotten this far without
thanks,
Anthony,
man.
This is really nice.
Yeah, wow.
This is very sweet.
One of the more wholesome moments.
Yeah. You know, and one of the things that I really like is the use of Indiegogo. And with any crowdfunding platform, I think it's a really interesting way to get people excited and have them feel like they're in, you know, both monetarily and emotionally invested in a project. They can watch you guys as you build this out, and this is, you know, obviously your baby. You've been working on this for years at this point.
And you guys are giving people a little bit of extra things, which is really probably important when you're doing sort of this grassroots fund building project. You've got the website going, and I'm sure that you've got other things that you're going to be rolling out at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, this has been a really exciting kind of fun storytelling exercise where we decided we were going to film some material to sort of show off the world and some of the characters before the Indiegogo to sort of help raise the platform. And we got like, you know, grew some following in the process and filmed some really, really funny, interesting moments with our lead Kevin. So
yeah, that's where I was going with bringing up Kevin, because he's great. You can see him performing as the character on the Facebook page right now.
Yeah,
because we have these
lots of bites.
Yeah,
for people to see.
Good.
And we have like a bunch of them queued up to like support us through the Indiegogo campaign. They're just like 1 minute, like little bites, mm-hmm. little pieces of the world.
And well, that's an interesting way that we're approaching filmmaking now, where you have to give an audience a little something something. I think an interesting example, I don't know if it's a great example, but an interesting example is with Detective Pikachu.
Oh my god.
Okay. Ryan Reynolds.
Here we go.
Did you see it? Did
no,
you watch it?
I cannot wait.
I'm honestly into that movie. I'm fucking psyched.
And
about
I'm not even talking like
wait.
So Ryan Reynolds supposedly leaked Detective Pikachu. He posted something, I can't remember where, it was a Facebook or something like that, and it was like a full 2 hour thing, and they're like, oh my god, did he just post Detective Pikachu? And it's literally just a CGI, it's Detective Pikachu dancing for 2 hours.
Somebody animated that. Yeah,
and,
yeah,
wow. Exactly. And apparently there's a bunch of dirty outtakes of Ryan Reynolds
Deadpool as Pikachu,
more
right?
or less. But what I find really fascinating about that is that that's how you build a following. You know, when you've got people who are on the fence about like, do I really want to go see a movie about a 20-year-old, you know, property that maybe they have a nostalgic connection to, because, you know, as I'm sure most of us, I'm guessing we're all roughly around the same age.
That's how I learned how to read.
was Pokemon.
100%.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. I loved Pokemon. I got a fucking Game Boy in my backpack right now. I got Ruby in there. But the point being is that, you know, even I was on like, do I really want to go see Ryan Reynolds as fucking Pikachu? Like, is that really?
But then there was the big voice in the back of your head and it was like, yeah, Tom, yeah.
And this little content kind of got me into it. I was like, all right, I'll probably go see this movie. So they're going to get some money out of me. So I like this idea of being, you know, this is more than just a film you can watch. There's like extra things. There's something to get you excited about it. That's not just a trailer. You know, trailers are great. I love a good trailer. But if you can give me little bits of something that really builds into my connection with a property, whether that is a small indie movie or fucking Detective Pikachu. Yeah. Yeah.
And not only does it build up your anticipation for the final product, you know, I hate to call it that, but as a product, but it also integrates you into the world, which is one of my personally favorite things about anything. Like, I'm a huge fantasy and science fiction fan, and if I find a thing that I can immerse myself in, and like you said, one of your goals are is to kind of make people believe that maybe this hidden man isn't just like, maybe it is like a local legend or something somewhere. So what was the purpose behind a world building exercise there?
Well, it's kind of twofold. First of it is just like, I guess what I'm interested in as an artist. If like you really dug into me and like about cinema, I would quickly like not know what I'm talking about. Like, I'm not like a huge like cinephile. I think video games, you know, like Pokemon and like growing up, just like being immersed in like all that shit, you know, has really, for better or worse, influenced me. And a lot of it was like the RPGs and stuff, like Star Wars, you know, Mass Effect, like all that stuff where like you really like Fallout, you know, you really get into the world of it. So that stuff is just like kind of imprinted on me. Also, it's like, how do we cut through the noise, you know? Because there's so much shit. Not shit. Some of it's shit. But, like, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that's, like, going on, not even just in Chicago, but, like, everywhere.
Everywhere.
You know, it's so accessible to make a movie right now. We were just talking in the lobby, like, this would not, what we're doing would not have been possible, like, 10 years ago. So, everyone's doing their thing, and it's like, that's great, but how do we get this thing to like
stand out.
Yeah,
it's interesting to sort of think that like we all sort of exist in someone else's pocket, like every day, like we are somehow touched by someone else who like pulls this thing out of their pocket and then uses it to communicate. And it's like, how exactly can you use that as a tool to kind of cut through the noise and find a way to make it relate, like relevant to the filmmaking process.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think it's cool the connection you made with Detective Pikachu. Not that we have the resources at all to be on to be on that sort of level, but it's an interesting thing that I hadn't thought about with that as well. Mm-hmm. Where there are more and more attempts, I think, to sort of find ways to get into your pocket, and not just like burn a hole through it cash wise, but to actually like entertain you and make you feel like you're a part of something. And I think that's important.
Well, and that's the kind of currency of marketing. It's not dollars necessarily, it's attention.
Right.
It's why you have so many different properties and everything's, you know, trying to get you to engage in social media. It's not just watching the trailer, it's liking the trailer, it's sharing the trailer, it is tweeting about the trailer. The more that more impressions you can get on something, the better it is for your big company. And this is just a fact of filmmaking as a thing. It has always been a struggle between art and commerce.
Right.
So finding a way to do it genuinely, like you guys have done from a grassroots perspective, I think really makes me feel positive about the potential of social media to do good things for cinema and to get people to engage in something that isn't the Avengers, you know, and not to discredit the Avengers. What they've done is, you know, impressive in its own right, but I always feel the need to push back against those certain forces because they are so manipulative to a certain extent.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. I mean, they could, the thing is that they could put out literally any movie and people would go see it.
Yeah.
Even those DC movies, which are mostly crap, they still made a ton of money.
Yeah.
Like, Batman versus Superman made a fuck ton of money.
Yeah.
And granted, a bunch of it had to do with the first weekend where people don't know what they're about to see.
Right.
But even on the back end, you know, it's still pretty successful. It's still getting put out on Blu-ray and 4K and stuff. It's still a moneymaker for them as a property. So, like I said, I think this is a really good way to
use the powers that be, the things that are here, whether it's Facebook or Indiegogo, these platforms, to push something a little bit more homegrown, something that is more honest, something a little bit closer to the ground floor of indie cinema. As it pertains to the website and the whole myth making thing, I have to bring up the Blair Witch Project.
Because that comes a lot. That comes up kidding. A lot.
I know. Well, because it's, you know, that's everybody's kind of cultural touchstone for
mockumentary.
Yeah, yeah. To a certain extent, or to this augmented reality of literally creating a fictional myth that people believed. And granted, that came along in a time where the internet was still young and people weren't really sure what to believe. But I find it interesting that this is still a viable mode of storytelling. And I've been reading this great book, Best Movie Year Ever, How 1999 Blew Up the Big Screen, by Brian Raftery, and he does a whole chapter on the Blair Witch Project, and there's a good amount of it about indie filmmaking. It's not just about how Blair Witch kind of like fooled a bunch of people and was a massive hit, but about how these guys literally went to a woods with an outline and had three actors just improvise and hit certain beats as they told one of the most terrifying tales I've ever seen committed to film. So did you guys see The Blair Witch when you were younger, or like when did you become aware of that sort of myth making?
Yeah, so I saw it, I've seen it once in my life when I was very young, and I don't even remember it too well, but it definitely, I haven't even thought about what the impression it left on me until we're like talking about it right now. Yeah. And like, as you're explaining, it's like, yes, this is what happened, which is facts I've, you know, just knew about, but it's very similar to what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it, I would say it definitely.
But a fun twist on it, that's what I like about it, is that like, you guys are doing this as a mockumentary and a sort of not antithesis, but a sort of turn on the Blair Witch idea, which has been bastardized a lot of times. I think Absolutely. This is closer to doing like a Blair Witch style thing, granted in a slightly different genre, but you know, using myth making and putting something together that people will question, and they'll be like, "Oh, wow!" As you said, you want half the audience to be laughing, half the audience to be like, "What the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this real? Do I know who is the hidden man?"
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
my metric for like godly success with this movie is actually manifesting a hidden man who's real, because the crux of this
that's
is
the
like,
metaphysical layer of the reality that,
yeah,
that you're
exactly,
talking about
exactly.
Where you just
more
grab
he's unearth-
it.
It's unearthing him more
right.
than you know
exactly.
When you explained the premise to it, I just immediately saw, because I just had a really strange Uber experience on the way here, and I was just like, I just can't wait for when I'm driving in an Uber and some guy is gonna like we're gonna be in traffic and he's gonna look back and he's like, "You hear about the hidden man, bro?" I don't know,
crazy.
Man. I think he's real.
I think that's my metric for success with this one.
Yeah.
Get an Uber driver.
Because the thing is, like, you watch the trailer, and the joke of it is, it's just like a guy who's dressed up in a bunch of garbage.
Yeah.
That's like the
I
big
think
joke.
We've been describing him as a mythical trash man who's sort of become the focus of a suburban Illinois town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you guys have a bit more work to do on the film. You mentioned that you're gonna do some more shooting. Is there a particular timeline you guys are working with in terms of a release, or at least completion of principal photography?
Yeah, so our shoot is scheduled for 10 days next month, and then that's like the main three storylines. Mm-hmm. And then outside of that, there's like little pickup scenes, like just like one-off day player scenes that we're gonna be shooting probably throughout the summer, and then I'll be cutting it unless we can get money from the Indiegogo to hire someone to cut it.
Yeah, there you go.
And then after that, you know, see how we do on the whole film festival thing, and then just trying to sell it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's always the thing.
That's the end game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Avengers end game.
God damn it! I hate that word.
Took that term away.
They
took it from us.
We can
fucking
never
Disney.
We can never say end game again without people being like Avengers.
Oh, yeah, like, you mean like
Iron Man?
God damn it.
I don't know if I'm going to keep this in the episode, but have you, wait, do you care about Avengers? Give a shit about it, really?
No.
All right. Iron Man dies, everybody. Yeah. He's dead. There you
and,
go.
And let's be real, nobody gives a shit.
No.
Nobody
makes
cares.
No difference.
And not, and especially not Robert Downey Jr. He can't fucking wait.
He's
he could not
on.
Wait.
He's done with it.
We'll cut that, probably.
Keep it
more.
In.
Dude, release that as a trailer for the episode. Iron Man dies, everybody.
Iron Man dies, everybody.
Oh, that would right. be so... Talk about manipulative.
Yeah. Zach and Anthony, why don't you tell us where we can follow the film, where we can follow you guys, and keep up to date with everything?
Yeah. So follow the film on Facebook and Instagram as Who Is the Hidden Man? All one word. And then we have a severely neglected Twitter account, which is Oracle_Joe. You can follow me on Instagram on Zach, Z-A-C-H, period, Lona, L-O-N-A. My whole thing there is doing avant-garde selfies.
Nice.
They're that. Experimental selfies.
Cool.
Please like them.
We need that.
Yeah.
please like them. We can do that. What about you, Anthony?
Yeah, I'll speak on my collective. You can actually follow us on Facebook, Familiar Collective. We actually do monthly headshots for actors, try to meet some people in the community. It's been a great way for us to connect. Next one's coming up May 24th, so we're currently booking people. And you can contact us actually at our Instagram too, which is at Familiar Collective.
At Familiar Collective.
Yep.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you so much, Zach, Anthony. Appreciate you guys coming in on a rainy Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, I do have to mention here, Zach is dressed in a
nine. It's a good day for the hidden man, though. Yeah. It is a good day for the hidden man. But that drear.
The minute I walked in, though, I'm in my Kill Bill hoodie. I'm wearing literally all black, and then Zach is here looking sharp as hell.
Yeah, walked into the building just immediately outclassed.
Yeah.
See, I do this. I do Fancy Friday at my day job, and I'm the only guy who does that. And I'll just throw on the suit and tie if I'm feeling, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, you've got it. Why not wear it?
My grandmother, her word of advice was, when you feel your worst, dress your best.
There you go.
And that's it.
We'll take it.
You're doing okay, Zach.
All right. Thanks again, guys. This has been No Coast Cinema here on WGN Plus. We're your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we will see you all next time.